What's it all for?
Various artists.
Sky Lanson's story is a Tamaki-based artist whose practice explores climate change, urban infrastructure, site-responsive approaches, and Indigenous futurisms through various mediums, primarily working across moving image, sound, and sculpture to dissect her subject matter. Her current solo exhibition at Window Gallery, Te Mori o Te Wai, takes its name after Auckland Council's freshwater vision to protect and enhance the life-sustaining capacity of water, responding to the 2023 Auckland Anniversary Day floods and the ongoing failures of our urban water infrastructures through the sculptural installation. In Te Mori o Te Wai, concrete, steel, wool, rainwater and harakeke act as vessels to resound the loss of wetlands in Aotearoa, holding great memory, Māori and agency as materials. Here the artist asks how we might shift from containing water to living with it, imagining a future where natural materials and infrastructures are treated as a healing aid and collaborator in our relationship with water. I had a kōrero with Sky Lanson's story about the show.
Kia ora, ko Sky tōku ingoa, ko Ngāti Maniapoto, ko te whakatohia, ko Ngāti Tūwhariatō uku iwi. My practice is primarily sculptural and moving image based, and the key things that influence my work is looking into climate change, site-based practice, and sound.
In your current exhibition at Window Gallery Te Mori o Te Wai, you're responding to the ongoing impact of the 2023 Auckland Anniversary Day floods, as well as these faults within our urban water infrastructures, creating a sculptural installation in which a path of harakeke bushes lead to a rainwater fountain encompassed by a curtain of harakeke threaded with wool and held by this steel structure. I guess to introduce the show, would you like to start by speaking to the initial conception of this work and your interest in the subject matter?
I've been working in the realms of looking at the failure of urban water infrastructure for the past 3 years. I think starting from the year 2023, when those Auckland anniversary floods happened, I think my sort of initial interest in that stemmed from just having someone very close to me have their home like become displaced from the floods. And then I think from there that sort of confirmed to me how important our drainage infrastructure is, and how important plumbing is, and how it's deeply neglected, I think, at the moment. So from that, my first work that I did back in 2023 was called Flowing Waters, and that was a sculptural based work that took different various pipes, as well as I did a lot of plaster moulding as well. And so that was directly looking at the fact that our drainage infrastructure in Auckland is decades behind and needs to be re-looked at, and what are we going to do with that in a changing climate, essentially. And so progressing from there, then I did a sort of response to that work called Flowing Waters 2, but this piece was a moving image work that also used projection mapping. And so it was a sort of moving image work that was just taken of different recordings of the waterways around Auckland. And so it was basically looking at how when we have heavy stormwater, the sewage pipes and the stormwater pipes combine. And so as a result of that, our waterways are contaminated and we cannot use them anymore. And so I think that sort of set me on a path of looking into these sort of like civil spaces. And then 2024, I got a job as a university note taker through the Disability Services. And so through that, I was given a student who was in an architecture class. And so those were basically the key questions that they were asking, and looking at, well, how can we create a sustainable relationship with land when that land has been contaminated and its roots are in something so like toxic and unhealthy, especially due to colonization. Then I was also given an engineering student, and then from then I was also, last year I was given a biodiversity student. And so those sort of the takeaways that I got from those subjects is what I ended up putting into my work and the development. And so by the time it got to 2025, I started becoming really interested in what was going to happen with the flood affected areas. So I was doing research into the Category 3 sites and just what the council was sort of doing to future proof our city. And so I started deep diving into these sort of council buyouts of land. So Category 3 is looking at sites that are intolerable to life. And so basically those homes were being bought by the council. I guess my pressing question was, what happens with land that is made uninhabitable by climate change?
Mm.
And so the answer to that is that the council actually don't know. Mm. And I saw that they've got a submissions page where if there's a site that you know of and you're interested and you have an idea of what you want to do with that land, you can propose that idea. But yeah, so I think my biggest fear when learning about this is just the possibility of redevelopment by private buyers, which has already happened.
Mm.
And so I was doing more research into these areas, and I made a moving image work called Kei Te Heke Ngā Roimata o Ranginui, which basically means the tears of Ranginui are falling and is said when it is raining. And so that work was based in a Category 3 site where several homes had been removed, so it was just an empty plot of land. And this was located in Grey Lynn at the bottom of Dryden Street.
Mm.
And so I was sort of mapping the area out in the moving image work, and then also just questioning, well, recognising the past history of the site and then to who the whenua belongs to, as well as what the present looks like, and then questioning, well, what is the future for these places? And one big thing that felt really eerie to me was just all these houses are removed. You could tell that the site was initially a floodplain and wasn't meant to be built on anyway because of how muddy the ground was.
Mm.
But also, yeah, what got me was just the slabs of concrete that were left behind that basically were the driveways that now lead to nowhere.
Mm.
And so it was a very sort of, yeah, eerie feeling just like looking at something that is no longer there but has that lasting, I guess, like trace of it. And so that led into Te Mori o Te Wai. Because I was doing so much research into Auckland Council, the title actually came from Auckland Council's future vision, which is to enhance and protect Te Mori o Te Wai, the life-sustaining capacity of water. And so I sort of wanted to do a sculptural response to what I was feeling when making that moving image work. And so with that, my whakaaro on that is that these sites should be returned to the whenua and be made into wetlands as a way to help the drainage infrastructure that is failing anyway, but also, yeah, to just give a way to return the whenua to Papatua Anuku.
I want to get into speaking a little bit more to your materiality, more specifically shortly, but I guess before that, I'd love to hear a little more on how you took those initial concepts from ideas to making the work. As you said, you've worked in moving image and sound as well, but what led you to explore these ideas through sculpture specifically? Are you able to speak to this development of ideas and their final sculptural form?
Mm. I think I love using my hands, basically. I'm a very tactile person.
Mm.
And I think with my moving image work, it was speaking to these sort of urban environments, but also speaking to our wetlands, which 90% have been destroyed.
Mm.
And so there's a sort of like yearning to bring those back, I guess. And so I was thinking, well, how can I make something that speaks to the materials of these two environments? So I think to represent each space, I sort of chose for the civil side, I chose concrete because that is, yeah, there's lots of consequences when it comes to concrete with using it, which I'll get into later. And then harakeke as the other side. It was more so about me understanding these materials and how they work. I really wanted to sort of like get intimate with the materials. I've always loved working with harakeke because of the process and then also the mātauranga that comes from that. And I'm really appreciative of my tūpuna and the fact that I can partake in rāranga and just those like processes of harvesting. But when looking at concrete, I'm very familiar with working with materials like clay, which is very like moldable. But working with something like concrete was really quite new to me and a bit frustrating.
Mm.
I think I wanted the materials to speak for themselves in this work, and so the most important part of my process was getting to understand how they work. And what I really enjoyed also was just looking at the slight differences, and so like in how concrete dries in comparison to how harakeke dries, and also just showing about how these two different environments have two different outcomes. So with concrete, that's something that's not going to go away. Whereas harakeke is part of an ecosystem that will give back to itself and regenerate and create more life. And so I really wanted to add the aspect of human touch into the work, especially when it came to concrete, because we're the ones who build our cities. And I feel like we're not really looking to the future of how to, I guess, protect ourselves and prepare for climate change. I feel silly saying that because it's just so talked about, but it quite literally is just that, the consequences of climate change and just the fact that the way that we've built our cities isn't sustainable and it's not going to last unless we change.
Yeah, I think it's interesting in terms of materiality. I kind of read that concrete and steel, I kind of read them as kind of these more hard materials, where you kind of see this in urban infrastructure as well, where the contrast between nature, greenery, natural material, and these big concrete buildings can be quite harsh when nature is disrupted by the structure of our cities. And it feels like maybe in Te Moriori Te Wai, you've kind of explored in your placement of the harakeke bushes on the floor of the gallery and the fountain being this pillar of sorts, that maybe there's potentially an exploration of power shared unequally between these materials and the work. Does that sentiment resonate at all? Can you speak to me a little bit more about your process in terms of placement and installation there?
The power dynamic is really interesting, because immediately I think about the fact that there is an obvious power dynamic, just the fact that our wetlands have been taken away from us, and well, they became dumping grounds after the 1856 Wastelands Act. I did a lot of research before I made my work into Britt Graham's Wastelands work, because it's directly speaking to that, and then it's also speaking to the Māori economy, and by taking away these wetlands, they're also taking away the Māori economy that used to exist there. But I think I wanted to install it in a way, the rocks on the ground, if you look at them really carefully, they're all different hand prints and like hand gestures that I've done. And so I think I was thinking a lot about the, well, our footprint that we have as humans. And then for my sculptural work, there was a cord that works, that is there purposely for the fountain. But rather than hiding that, I wanted to incorporate it into the work and make it part of it. So I'm speaking about these industrial spaces, so it made sense to me to get to use a bright yellow industrial cord. And when installing, I was wanting it to sort of be the trace of water. And so I think the whole work is like an intersection of just these two natural but also unnatural spaces combined, and seeing them, I guess, that contrast, that harsh contrast, to make you think about the way that we build our cities and the way that we can shift that also, and what we need to move towards. And so I also think with using the trace, with the way that I've arranged the stones, I was thinking of them as little wetlands, because especially in Tamaki, we would have been covered in wetlands, this whenua. And so I guess that's where that sort of thought process came from. What is interesting, though, also, is that I wanted more harakeke, because I want it to feel more balanced rather than there being a power imbalance a little bit. But I got my period and I wasn't able to harvest anymore when I needed to. And so that that also like changed it. But I guess that fed into part of the work as well. I think with the sculpture itself, I wanted to make sure that it had all the key elements that I was speaking to. And so I guess including water in that was quite difficult when I was trying to, I guess, plan out how was I going to create this installation, or well, this piece that I wanted. It initially started with the iron, with the steel rod frame and the harakeke that I had sort of like wrapped around like a korowai around the piece. And then when looking at it, by elevating it, it gave it more of an architectural feel to it, I guess, and spoke more to the sort of kaupapa that I was looking in. And so that's where the idea of bringing water and bringing concrete into that sort of came to be. Because I was thinking, I initially used steel rather than concrete, because I was thinking about the skeleton that is within our concrete and between our structures and our footpaths. That's what I was initially thinking of. But then it ended up coming into one, and I was quite quite happy with. I feel like I should say something better than I'm happy. But it felt right, basically, bringing those in together.
What kind of underlies this work is this idea that materiality, memory, modi, and agency are intertwined, that material holds the weight of experience and can echo the impact and memories of the Auckland anniversary floods. Would you like to speak a little further to this idea and how these connections are revealed in the work as well?
To me, everything has whakapapa, everything has modi. Even when working with concrete, that sort of relationship between materials felt quite significant because you're working with limestone, which is basically shells of an ancient ocean, and then you're working with sand. And these materials as well, I just want to say concrete, we're kind of running out of concrete, which is crazy to me because of how extractive the sort of process of harvesting that sand, and because it's riverbed sand. And so those processes themselves have heavy consequences. And through making this work, because I was mixing this cement in the sand to sort of get the right consistency that I could mold it with my hands and it wouldn't break when I put it down. And the amount of sand that went into that one sculpture was a lot more than I had anticipated. And it really, I think, it blew my perspective as to, when looking around, I guess, our cities, when looking around the building that I was working in as well, because I was still at uni when doing that, and just that, yeah, it makes sense. Well, it's just, like, mind-blowing to me, I guess.
No, that's insane.
And so everything has memory. Everything has modi. I think that's something that I've always known and, like, stuck with and has stuck with me when looking at these places, like, where did they come from? Is quite important too, and just honouring that memory that these materials hold. And then also because when you're working with whenua, that whenua has a memory as well as what was the past, what used to exist there, what was the present, and looking at, well, what is the future of it going to be? As I said before, I think working, when I was doing that moving image work in the site is what, that's really what stuck with me when making it, because I was thinking about, well, how can I make a work that honours the past history of the site but also is empathetic to those who lived there and have been displaced from their homes and had to move and leave that behind. And so also when looking at the future of the site, you want to honour those that came before and, like, had connections with that site, rather than just building a whole new block of houses that could potentially flood and put people's life in jeopardy again.
That leads really nicely to my last question. You mentioned, of course, at the beginning that the work is titled after Auckland Council's freshwater vision, Te Mauri o Te Wai, and it seeks to kind of resound the loss of the wetlands in Aotearoa and imagine a future where matter and natural materials and infrastructures are treated as a healing aid and a collaborator in our relationship with water, questioning how we might shift from containing water to living with it, using ideas of new materialism and Indigenous futurism to guide us. I guess to kind of wrap up our kōrero on the show, are you able to speak a little bit more to this exploration of future thinking and how it's explored in the work?
I think a lot of this work has been, like, quite literal research. I guess I could have been thinking more about the sort of sculptural terms and ways of using that, but I really wanted to let the materials guide the piece. And so a lot of my research was done into looking at the mahi of Troy Brockbank, civil engineer and storm and water practitioner, especially his research paper called Just Add Modi. And so basically he's looking at the combination of water-sensitive design with tikanga Māori. And he speaks about wetlands in particular in this paper and how they can be used as green infrastructure. He uses the Māori model and it looks at how we can, by recognising that everything has Māori, we can use that to make better informed decisions and in how we navigate water-sensitive design. And he talks about wetlands as an alternative of green infrastructure, especially because it costs so much to replace our pipes. Which needs to be done, and slowly, I think, is being done. But by having, well, one, I'm always in support of reclaiming and returning wetlands to the whenua, but also looking at it from a sort of, like, urban infrastructure, like, civil engineering point of view. The combination of stormwater infrastructure and green infrastructure like wetlands is a good way to sort of, it won't fix the problem that the floods create, but it will help reduce the impact of that. Wetlands are able to basically absorb water and hold water, which prevents the amount of rainfall that goes into our stormwater drains. So basically reducing the amount of flooding that we have. And it's, although still expensive, it's a good alternative and they can work together. I think we should be bringing more sort of green infrastructure into our design of our cities as well, because it brings more biodiversity as well as it enhances the life quality of those who live there. I think ultimately I would love to return all these sites to wetlands. That would be the ultimate, but I'm also aware of just the fact that that probably won't happen. So I guess in a way I'm like looking at alternatives of trying to create a kōrero and a conversation around, well, I guess the intersection of like bringing those two together.
That was artist Sky Lunson's story speaking to me about her current solo exhibition, Te Mauri o Te Wai. The show is on now until the 18th of March at Window Gallery in the University of Auckland General Library Foyer, so go check it out.